David Beispiel's Poetry Wire column is published by The Rumpus. This audio is a production of Blue Brick Records. For more information, go to bluebrickrecords.com.
A scream of consciousness. I often feel that my day-to-day experiences border between the routine and the ordinary. I've come to think of my attention to these rhythms as my training as a poet. By looking closely at daily passages, I have learned something, I believe, about alertness, and I hope about empathy and compassion and the metaphors the heart fashions from life. For example, a couple of weeks back, Wendy and I drove across the Willamette River here in Portland to take in the opera's opening performance of Carmen. In addition to the flaming pink stockings sported by the bullfighter Escamillo in the closing act, and the stunning sincerity of soprano Jennifer Forney's Michaela's Act III aria, Je dis qu'rien ne me pouvant, the biggest pleasure for me came from Sandra Peak Eddy's saucy abanera, done with a mezzo meets pretty woman's sexiness. What I take from the cheerful, lean fire in Sandra Peak Eddy's singing is that she wants her Carmen to perform life, to exist without being overwhelmed by sadness, to maintain her empowerment, if not her peace of mind, and to relate to the thrills of human nature, especially desire. Those traits, performance, empowerment, and thrill as factors of a good heart, are also, to my mind, signal aspects of the poet's voice. I'd already been thinking this way since last month when Wendy and I, while traveling to New York, saw La Traviata at the Met. There we looked into the cataclysmically breathtaking triumph of Sonia Yontcheva's Violetta. Coming out of the hall into the city that night, we just couldn't stop praising her shining voice, especially in the closing aria of Act II, Amo Mi Alfredo, when Violetta abandons her lover Alfredo with her fatal sacrificial act of love. Well, I've been humming the aria ever since, and meanwhile, too, I read that James Jordan of The Observer calls Sonia Yontcheva's Violetta nothing short of magnificent, and Zachary Wolfe of The Times croons her arias were a creation full of searching details. More on all this in a moment. Some of my friends have told me that while poetry is good and all, it is not really very relevant. They say it doesn't have much in the way of power or influence in the world. They claim that anger, greed, hatred, war, and all that, and worse, are too much a part of human nature, and that poetry barely comes out from under the domination of those other things. I disagree. We human beings have existed with poetry for over 100,000 years. Despite all the wars, we find that human beings define themselves not by their aggressions and hatreds, though of course some do, but by their compassion and love. Violence so dominates the nightly news because it's an aberration of the norm. We do not expect our police to kill suspects in custody, our soldiers to torture captured combatants, terrorists to bomb crowded cafes, adults to sexually abuse children. And so we are honestly shocked, and that becomes our village's news. Acts of compassion, intent on freeing others from suffering, including the communion promised in the gift of an individual poem presented to an individual reader, are taken for granted and basically ignored. but poetry reminds us that human nature prefers the utterance of a single voice when it reveals our individual condition and our social bonds, and also when it expresses the general idea that human loneliness is not bearable. A poet's scream of consciousness cries out for a human ear to listen closely, screams, cries out, and also whispers, protests, and also interrogates, rebuts, apologizes, exclaims, proclaims, or vows, and more. What I mean is, a poet depends on others. This shared alertness between poet and listener becomes evident if we consider our own existences. I mean, we are dependent on others for companionship, friendship, love, food, and shelter. If I were to depart from the course of my daily living and remove myself to some remote existence, say, in the forest, no matter how capable I was, no matter how well I might survive for a time, I would still long for human connection. I might connect with the birds, the animals, the plants, the trees, and ferns, and sky. But this would not be the same as another human being, and the sharing of our human stories with our voices, including our literary voices. Poetry is an art spoken, as if sung, in relation to other human beings. Which brings me back to Violetta. At the end of Act Two, she gets caught in the illusion that she can be separate from her lover, Alfredo, and still exist in love, even though she seems to know in her heart all the while that her sacrifice will kill her. Her broken cry, "Amami Alfredo," is sung after Alfredo has found her writing a letter of farewell to him. I know she's writing a letter, but sometimes I like to think of her letter as a kind of poem, just in the form of a letter, and the aria that follows as the essence of that poem. Anyway, she's writing to Alfredo to say she is leaving him after Alfredo's father implores her to do so. In Amami Alfredo, Violetta tries to release her psyche of the love she cherishes and tries also to abandon the fulfillment of her aspirations. Amami Alfredo defines her and Alfredo and the world in that moment, just as the utterance of a poem defines poet, speaker, and listener inside the passages of existence. The aria contains her being, and like a poem, it unfurls the voice of her consciousness. Di lagrime a viva duopo, or son tranquilla. Lo vedi? Ti sorrido. Lo vedi? Sarò l'altra qui fior presso ti sempre. Amami, Alfredo, quant'io t'amo. Addio. I needed tears. Now I feel better. See? I'm smiling at you, see? I shall always be here, near you, among the flowers. Love me, Alfredo. Love me as much as I love you. Goodbye. In these lines, I see Violetta's capacity to release her psyche, just as a poet does through a poem, and her utterance is dependent upon Alfredo's presence. Of course, the lyrics from a libretto are a wee bit nude without hearing them sung with the orchestration of the music, and I know an aria and a poem are different and meant to be so. Sonia Yonchiva's scream of consciousness is, well, her voice soars on the first note with overflowing tenderness and then cascades into a feral imperative, "Amami, love me." And then she cradles and clings to his name, Alfredo. Then Violetta's voice takes flight a second time, now as a lament for her sacrifice for love, and also as an alarm to lovers everywhere. Quant'io t'amo. Love me as much as I love you. This is followed by a hard intake of breath, like a gasp, and finally she repeats it all over again in one extended ululation as a fierce, empowered, heart-sore, 20-second-long sob. Listen. Listen. This all-consuming utterance of Violetta's is the sort of, if you will, poem I am most attracted to, where you can sense that all events in life are interconnected, when the intertwined fate of others is acknowledged so that an individual person on her own can't conceive of herself or be conceived of separate from the existence of other human beings. If there were no one to relate your experiences to, you'd simply be echoing your own mind. I see this connection and communion in consciousness as fundamental to poetry. When Gerard Manley Hopkins speaks to his feelings of utter self and utter self-awareness of self, he asserts a yearning for connection. I wake and feel the fell of dark, not day. What hours, or what black hours we have spent this night, what sights you heart saw, ways you went, and more must and yet longer lights delay. With witness I speak this, but where I say hours, I mean years, mean life, and my lament is cries countless, cries like dead letters sent to dearest him that lives, alas, away. When Marina Tsvetaeva addresses the night, she does so as a member of a tribe and a nation. In the dark midnight under the ancient tree's shroud, we gave you suns as perfect as night, suns as poor as the night, and the nightingale cheered your might. We never stopped you, companions for marvelous hours, poverties, passions, the impoverished meals we shared, the fierce bonfires glow, and there, on the carpet below, fell stars. When Tomas Tranströmer considers his individuality, he understands his passages of daily life lead him to the existence of others. We walk in the sun in hundreds. Each man is a half-open door leading to a room for everyone. The endless ground under us. The water is shining among the trees. The lake is a window into the earth. When C.D. Wright considers the mysteries of time, she accepts the human connections that exist here and the capaciousness of our shared everyday emotions. Mystery, mystery and a curse. The watery grave, take the bone man's hand. Is that your can slashing through the grass? Deep step, come shining. If I shell those beans for you, will you cook a mess for me? There goes Hannah behind that cloudlet. They hung in there when I was broke and sorry. They hung in there when I was mean and nasty. They hung in there when I was drunk and strung out. They hung on in. When Lucille Clifton imagines the beginning of names, she includes the future. The names of the things bloom in my mouth. My body opens into brothers. When Yves Bonfoy considers the natural world, he sees it as a correspondence with the lives that are missing but always present to him. Snow, a letter that we find and unfold, and the ink on it has faded, and in the marks the clumsiness of the wit is visible, which can only muddle up its sharp shadows. And we try to read. We don't understand who is interested in us in memory, except that it's summer again. And we see under the flakes the leaves and the heat rise from the missing sun like a mist. When Venus Corrugata wonders what words are, she knows the meanings of words come from their usages. They grip each other with a cry, expand into lamentations, become mist on the windows of dead houses, crystallize into chips of grief on dead lips, attach themselves to a fallen star, dig their hole in nothingness, breathe out strayed souls. Words are rocky tears, the keys to the first doors. They grumble in caverns, lead their ruckus to storms, their silence to bread that's ovened alive. I could go on. Here are examples of clear, enriching poetry as consciousness in extremis, utterances to the world in full ecstasy of the imprint of their minds to be heard by someone predisposed to listen and intent on sharing the rhythms of existence. Without this fostering of interdependence, a poet's voice risks its own disillusion. But it's through the compassionate scream of consciousness, Amma Mi Alfredo, that poems unite us.
This has been a production of Blue Brick Records, theme music by Weasel Blue and the Gypsters. For more information, go to bluebrickrecords.com.